With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Ladies and gentlemen, the captain has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign. If you haven't already done so, please make sure the volume of this podcast is set perfectly to your listening enjoyment. Please take your seat, whether that's on the treadmill, car, sofa, or bed, and buckle in for the last trip. My name is Jamie Beebe, and I'll be your tour guide, recreating someone's last days in paradise. On behalf of myself and everyone behind the scenes, please enjoy the Last Trip podcast. And because nobody likes a long flight to get to where they want to be, let's prepare for takeoff. In 1989, Sandra Valentine was a successful 30-year-old woman living in New York when she decided to travel the world for a year. But 8 months into her trip, on March 28th, she mysteriously vanished in Sri Lanka. These were the days before cell phone tracking and cameras on every corner, so there were no clues left behind until months later when her diary was found, giving her family insight into her last days. But 35 years later, Sandra Valentine is still missing. 1989 was a tumultuous year for Sri Lanka, marked by significant political and social unrest. The country had two major conflicts going on: the civil war between the government and the Liberation Tigers of Tamililam, and the second Janathka Vimukthi Peramuna, the JVP, insurrection. The civil war started in 1983 because the Tamil minority group was fighting for their own independent state in the north and east of the island. By 1989, the conflict had intensified, with both sides committing severe human rights violations, resulting in heavy casualties and widespread displacement of civilians. Parallel to the civil war, the JVP, a Marxist-Leninist insurgent group, launched its second insurrection against the Sri Lankan government. This insurrection, which began in the late 1980s, also reached their peak in 1989. The JVP's campaign of violence included assassinations, attacks on government infrastructure, and widespread intimidation, leading to severe reprisals from the government. These conflicts seriously impacted Sri Lanka's economy, because tourism is a major industry for the island and nobody is visiting a country at war. And daily life was disrupted with violence, curfews, and an overall climate of fear. Many countries issued travel advisories, warning their citizens against traveling to Sri Lanka at this time. And Sri Lanka was perceived as a dangerous destination. News reports highlighted the violence and instability, so many potential travelers were discouraged from visiting. But that didn't stop Sandra. She felt the violence had eased up enough for her to visit, especially because several tour companies had recently resumed operations on the island, with most of the violence centered within the local communities. During this time, Sri Lanka's technology was relatively underdeveloped compared to more industrialized nations. Landline phones were the primary means of communication, but access to telephone lines was limited, especially in rural areas. International calls were expensive and had to be placed through operators, and the network was often unreliable. Radio was most popular for news and entertainment, but television was becoming more widespread. Personal computers were slowly being introduced in urban areas for businesses, government offices, and educational institutions, but they were really expensive and mostly used for basic office applications like word processing, spreadsheets, and database management. Also, access to electricity was still not universal throughout Sri Lanka. Power outages were common, transportation and communication was underdeveloped. Roads, railways, and postal services were very basic. Letters sent overseas would often take weeks to arrive. But the beauty and culture of the country was alive and well, just like it is today. And there's a wide range of attractions and things to do in Sri Lanka. First on my list is the Sigiriya Rock Fortress, which is often referred to as the eighth wonder of the world. It's also known as Lion Rock and is one of Sri Lanka's most iconic landmarks and a UNESCO World Heritage Site. It was originally used as a Buddhist monastery dating back to at least the 3rd century BC. The entrance to the fortress is marked by a massive gate in the form of a lion, but today only the lion's paws remain. According to legend, King Kasyapa murdered his father, King Katusina, and usurped the throne. But he feared retribution from his half-brother, Magallana, the rightful heir. So he transformed Sigiriya into a fortified palace complex. After Kasyapa was defeated in battle by Magallana, the site was abandoned and referred back to the monastery, in the end, making it a super cool spot to visit if you're in Sri Lanka. There are also safari tours in the national parks that attract many visitors. There you can see elephants, leopards, crocodiles, and a variety of bird species. The beaches are some of the most beautiful in the world, perfect for relaxing and sunbathing, as well as surfing, snorkeling, and diving. And if you're like me and have always wanted to swim with sharks, Shark Point Reef at Pigeon Island National Park is the place to go. These sharks are up to 5 feet long and reliably seen. They're mostly non-aggressive and accepting of humans in the water. And if you go to that spot, you will almost always see at least a couple of them. Sandra spent some time in the city of Nuwara Eliya, often called Little England. It was founded in the early 19th century by British colonists as a retreat to escape the heat of the lowlands. Because of the cool climate and vegetation, the region became a great spot for tea production with lots of plantations. And tea cultivation continues to be a significant part of the economy and culture there. Now, I've visited coffee plantations in several countries, but I have yet to visit a tea plantation. So that would definitely be on my list of things to do in Sri Lanka. The island is fascinating to me, and I could spend all day telling you about all the cool things I found to do there. But it's time to dive in and learn more about Sandra Valentine and her trip around the world.
Hey, creepy people!
This is PNW, Haunts and Homicides. I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Cassie.
Together, we explore stories of the paranormal and true crime throughout the Pacific Northwest. For each episode, we do a tarot reading to help us gain some insight on the topic as we share the facts of the case and our interpretations. You can find our episodes featuring true stories from infamous cases such as the misdeeds of Boeing, as well as lesser-known true crime cases like the murders in Tunnel 13.
As well as our spooky stories from Pike Place and Raven's Manor on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else you'd like to listen. Have a creepy-ass day!
Sandra Valentine was born and raised in Manhattan, New York. Her father, Richard Valentine, was a partner in a New York City law firm, and her stepmother, Nancy, was a painter and an expert on antique silver. She grew up on the Upper East Side with her sister Patricia and her brother Paul. Sandra had a close-knit family and a wonderful childhood. She was educated at Convent of the Sacred Heart, and after graduation, she enrolled in Georgetown University in Washington, where she received a bachelor's degree in business administration. While there, she was president of an international students' organization and spent her junior year in Japan, immersing herself in the culture and learning the language. Her travels were something she prided herself on and truly loved learning everything she could about other cultures. She was tall and chic, but it was her smarts and her charm that helped her become one of New York City's highest paid office equipment salespeople as an executive at the Savin Office Equipment Company. But even though she was extremely successful and on the fast track, at the age of 30, she felt that something was missing. So, Sandra quit her job and took a year off to travel the world and find what she was missing. Even though she could afford to travel in luxury, she avoided the 5-star tourist hotels. Instead, she chose simple guest houses, searching for insight into the different cultures that she could only get by living with the locals. She kept a diary of things she learned along her travels, as well as her innermost thoughts about life, writing, "What's most important to me? Everyone else seems to know themselves better than I do. I'm not happy with any one image of myself. I want to experience everything, but I want a simple, happy life." And although she skimped on lodging, she spent lavishly on gifts and air freight fees to ship souvenirs and photo albums home to her family as she went. Sandra was a very careful traveler. She always registered with the U.S. Embassy or consulate the moment she arrived in a new country. She researched her destinations and had a plan of where she was going and what she wanted to see there. She had a good sense and awareness about her and was experienced. She asked all the right questions, and her safety was important to her. She was very outgoing and made friends easily, so she frequently traveled with people she met along the way for stretches of time. So at what point in Sandra's trip around the world did things go so wrong? Let's find out after a word from our sponsors. Sandra left New York on July 17, 1988. She went to Japan, Australia, New Zealand, China, Tibet, and India before finally arriving in Sri Lanka 8 months into her trip. She was very active in her travels, like rock climbing in Australia and skiing in India, participating in everything available and living her life to the fullest. In Thailand, she trekked the mountains in Chiang Mai and strolled along white sand beaches. She studied the Four Noble Truths of Thai Buddhism, which describe how one can attain a life free of suffering, later writing in her diary that she understood that to end suffering, she had to eliminate desire. In Nepal, she wrote in her diary, "I feel like I went back in time a few centuries walking down this street." She described the warmth of a 3-course Christmas Eve meal of roast duck, stuffing, beer, and banana cake around a roaring fire with candles. In India, she recorded the words of the Dalai Lama in her diary. On February 27th, she wrote, "If there is no peace in one's mind, there can be no peace in one's approach to others. Everything becomes an object of memory, leaving the world empty-handed and naked. The suffering of death is unavoidable." After India, the plan was to visit Sri Lanka with another young American woman she had been traveling with. But her friend got sick while in India and decided to return to the United States instead. A letter she wrote home on March 24th said, "I didn't think I would actually use this part of my ticket due to problems of violence in some areas, but things have calmed down and even a few tour groups have restarted operations." And she let her parents know that she had registered with the American Embassy as a precaution, writing, "Please don't worry. Worrying is not good for the health. And as I tried to assure you, I am careful about what I eat and my personal safety." And with that, Sandra landed in Sri Lanka from Bombay on March 20th. Her diary indicated she was planning to stay 10 days, then return to southern India to see Trivandrum and Bangalore, before flying from Bombay to Tanzania to continue her journey. She had already booked a flight on Indian Airlines for March 30th, but she never boarded that flight. According to her diary, most of her time in Sri Lanka was largely uneventful. She spent 3 days on the beach at a $5-a-night guest house, and 3 more days in a Colombo suburb that she said had an ugly beach but nice people. Her final night, she described how she saw the best dancing in Asia, watching the traditional dancers in Kandy at Sri Lanka's ancient Buddhist center. And that night, she stayed in a little $2-a-night guest house in the area. The son of the owner of the guest house was Asanga Abiwikarama, and he remembered Sandra when questioned later. He said, "We talked for about a half hour. She was very kind, very friendly. I told her Kandy was very beautiful and that she should stay 3 or 4 days, but she said she wanted to spend a day or two in Nuwara Eliya, and then she had to get back to India or go to Africa or something." That next morning, March 28, 1989, Asanga's brother dropped Sandra off at the bus station. She left behind her large, overstuffed backpack at the guest house and said she would return within 2 days to collect it on the way to the airport. She took a public bus for 26 rupees, which is about 80 cents, to a tea estate called Labuk Keli Plantation that's open to tourists near Nuwara Eliya. This is confirmed because she signed the registration book at 11 a.m., took a guided tour, and then hitched a ride with a West German couple into town. When the German couple saw a news report about her disappearance, they reached out to her family and told them she bought a doll at the plantation as a gift for her niece, and she was only carrying her small blue backpack. In it would have been her diary, passport, traveler's checks, and likely a change of clothing. They told her parents they dropped her off near the golf links in Nuwara Eliya sometime in the early afternoon, but never saw her again. Later that afternoon, a hotel clerk at the Grand Hotel in Nuwara Eliya saw Sandra when she came in to use the phone to call Colombo to confirm her flight on the 30th. But that's the last time she was ever seen. Meaning sometime around the evening of March 28th or morning of March 29th, Sandra simply vanished. Unfortunately, it took several weeks before her parents realized she was missing. She was efficient and disciplined and wrote to her parents, sister, and friends every few days throughout her travels. But the letters took weeks to reach America, and the last letter her parents received was dated March 24th. So it wasn't until mid-May that they realized something was very wrong, and they reached out to the Sri Lankan authorities. But the authorities weren't taking Sandra's disappearance seriously. And her parents were frustrated after weeks of inaction by the State Department's Missing Persons Office. So on June 3rd, they traveled to Sri Lanka to look for their daughter. They arrived in Colombo and began to retrace her movements the best they could by visiting dozens of hotels, restaurants, and guest houses. But the information they were able to find wasn't helping much. Employees at a seedy hotel where Sandra spent her first night said a Canadian aid worker living in Sri Lanka tried to pick her up and was making her uncomfortable. But when they tracked the Canadian down, he denied having met her at all. Her family was assisted by American Express offices in Colombo and in the United States, which traced traveler's checks bought by Sandra, giving them an idea of the path she took throughout the island. At first, they thought maybe she left Sri Lanka and made it back to India and got sick there. But after the Sri Lankan tourism and immigration authorities let the Valentines study the records of foreigners entering and leaving the country, they realized she never made it off the island. Her family knew they needed help on the ground, so they hired Seychelles-based private detective Ian Withers. They also offered rewards and had Sandra's photo printed in Sri Lankan's national newspapers, hoping someone would recognize her and point them in the right direction. At one point during their three-week search, they even examined a partially decomposed body of a young woman found in a Nuwara Eliya stream, only to determine later from dental records that it wasn't Sandra. But there were some discrepancies about this body. Authorities first said it was a Caucasian woman who had been strangled. Then they said it was a Sri Lankan woman, but wouldn't give out her name. Given the mystery, there were questions on whether a Western woman had been killed in the area, and they were trying to cover it up. Just before the body was found, the U.S. Embassy received an anonymous letter, written in good but stilted English, saying that Sandra had been killed by, quote, hardcore criminals, after refusing to marry one of them in order to assist him in escaping to America. The letter said they have taken her to Nuwara Eliya and killed her, adding that her body would be found on nearby Pirutalagala Mountain, which had been off-limits except to security forces since 1985. Her father believed that letter held the truth, saying everything that happened is consistent with the letter. He asked police to comb the mountain, but they never did. The Valentines even consulted a Sri Lankan psychic because their lawyer said that often these people carry direct messages from the criminal or revolutionary underground. The psychic told them that three people were in a jeep near nightfall when they vanished. One was a white woman, the other two were men, one European and one Sri Lankan. In the end, the psychic said that Sandra had been murdered and they would never find any trace of her. Hitting wall after wall, Sandra's family finally went home without any answers. But on July 20th, 1989, the biggest clue in Sandra's disappearance was found when police recovered her diary. the diary Sandra had with her when she went missing. It was rain-soaked and moldy, found inside her small navy blue backpack, which had been tossed from the roadside onto the lawn of Nuwara Eliya's President's Summer Retreat. It was discovered by a caretaker on his morning rounds. Also in the backpack was a heavily used and underlined Lonely Planet guidebook to Sri Lanka, a government tourist map, a pair of broken white-framed sunglasses, an empty camera case, a crumpled and torn letter meant for her sister and probably the last one she wrote, and her American Express credit card. Her passport, some of her traveler's checks, and her camera are still missing. And so is the little doll she bought at the tea plantation. Finding her diary pushed officials to believe her disappearance was that of foul play. It also confirmed that whatever happened to her occurred in Sri Lanka, somewhere in the mountain jungles and tea estates around Nuwara Eliya. The diary is Sandra's last known record of her life. It contains universal messages of a road so often traveled, and the search to find a deeper meaning in life, a search that, in this case, ended in tragedy. According to her diary, she was careful when she traveled and had an insatiable desire to learn. In her writings, during more than a month in China, there were pages and pages of Chinese history dating back to the ancient dynasties, as well as key Chinese phrases and their English translations. She talked about the types of Chinese currency and proverbs, ranging from the wisdom of Confucius to the wisecrack of a Chinese waiter. She wrote about the inner workings of the different cultures she was traveling through, about her day-to-day activities, and her deepest thoughts about life. Once her diary was found, they could track her last days. Although it gave no more clues to what happened to Sandra or where she is now. But from it, they were able to come up with several theories after reading her last thoughts. What we know for sure is that Sandra was last seen making the phone call at the Grand Hotel to confirm her flight. After that, the assumption is that she was murdered, although her body has never been found. Authorities think she met someone later that afternoon and they killed her for money or something else, or she went off to one of the remote tourist sites and it happened there. When they looked through her Lonely Planet's guidebook, they saw that she underlined Adam's Peak and had a handwritten note on her tourist map that indicated she planned to sleep under the stars there that night. The site is on a remote jungle mountaintop where, just for a few seconds at dawn, a perfect triangle of light inexplicably forms in the sky. And many world travelers do sleep outside at a government campsite there, although it's not usually done by solo travelers. Adam's Peak was thought to be the Garden of Eden that survived Noah's flood. And at the top of the peak, there is what looks like a fossilized footprint. The Hindus claim the footprint belongs to Shiva, and the Buddhists claim it belongs to the Buddha, while the Christians and Muslims feel it belongs to Adam's ancient foot. Sandra's father feels in her trusting nature she likely took a ride from someone up the mountain, and it went terribly wrong, and she was likely killed that very night on March 28th, with her body dumped somewhere on Adam's Peak. One page in her diary stuck out, where she openly expressed her confusion about the meaning of life. She wrote, "I can't do everything at once. I'm sitting here thinking about doing at least 20 things, worrying about it, and not doing any of them." She noted that her confusion sat in her need for a plan and her desire to be more spontaneous. She wrote, "When I don't have a plan of action, I'm not happy. But I want to be more spontaneous and just concentrate on the present moment. I'm trying to better define myself, but I don't want to define myself too narrowly. What am I afraid of? Losing control? Missing out on something? Regretting that I did the wrong thing or spent my time unwisely? There's just so much that I'm interested in, and never enough time." Did she pick the wrong time and place to be more spontaneous, or was she questioning her own mortality? While there is a tiny possibility someone could still come forward, we will likely never know what happened to Sandra Valentine on March 28, 1989. Her father, Richard, died in 2003 without ever knowing what happened to his daughter, and her brother, Paul, died in 2005. Because there were never any answers, Sandra was mentioned on Paul's tombstone with the years 1958 to 1989 and only "missing in Sri Lanka" beneath it, with no mention of her death. And this brings us to the question on everyone's mind. Is Sri Lanka safe to visit? Well, it wasn't very safe in 1989 when Sandra went. But at the time, tourists weren't the ones getting killed, so she felt she would be okay and took a chance. But again, this was at the height of both the civil war and the JVP insurrection. The government had imposed curfews and travel restrictions in various parts of the country to maintain order and security, which disrupted daily life and travel plans and made it difficult for tourists to move around freely. There were also numerous checkpoints and a strong military presence throughout the country. While they intended for this to enhance security, these measures often led to delays, harassment, and a pervasive sense of insecurity. Overall, if a country is in the turmoil of a civil war or political unrest, there's always additional danger. So if you choose to go, make sure you do the research to know where you can safely visit and fully understand the risks you're taking. Today, Sri Lanka is at a level 2 travel advisory. Exercise increased caution due to civil unrest and terrorism. Protests over the economic and political situation in Sri Lanka could erupt at any time. And in some instances, police have used water cannons and tear gas to disperse protesters. U.S. citizens are reminded to avoid all gatherings, even peaceful ones, because they could turn violent with little or no warning. Reading that on the U.S. government travel advisory website, it doesn't sound much different than a warning about being in the United States would sound like, as we often have political demonstrations that turn violent these days. Terrorist attacks have occurred in Sri Lanka with little to no warning, targeting tourist locations, transportation hubs, markets, shopping malls, government facilities, hotels, clubs, restaurants, places of worship, parks, major sporting and cultural events, educational institutions, airports, hospitals, and other public areas. And again, it sounds similar to the U.S., although much of our terrorism is homegrown. Overall, those aren't warnings that would keep me away from Sri Lanka. With the right awareness and precautions, tourists are just as safe there as anywhere else. If you're headed to Sri Lanka, there are laws as well as some do's and don'ts to know before arriving. You must carry your travel and photo ID with you at all times, and it's illegal to cover your face in a way that prevents identification. The legal drinking age is 21, but it is illegal to drink alcohol or smoke in public. The penalties for carrying or using illegal drugs are very severe, including the death penalty. Even small amounts of recreational drugs and some prescription medications can get you arrested or jailed. If you make one dumb decision, you could spend years of your life in a foreign prison or face death. So don't do it. Sri Lanka has very conservative dress and behavior standards, so you want to be especially careful not to offend anyone. Women in particular should avoid any revealing clothing. This means no sleeveless or low-cut shirts or tank tops and no shorts. Make sure your knees are covered. Sri Lankan men will openly stare at female tourists, especially if they're dressed in revealing clothing. So watch your surroundings in public places and avoid revealing too much flesh. It's also illegal to engage in same-sex sexual acts in Sri Lanka. Homosexuality between men is illegal even in private and can lead to a prison sentence of up to 15 years. Homosexuality between women isn't necessarily recognized, but is also essentially illegal. So please be discreet while traveling. While I don't agree with their views, safety should always be your first priority in another country. Public displays of affection between men and women are also discouraged. Men and women do not typically touch, so even avoid shaking hands unless the person you greet offers first. Holding hands and affection towards children is okay, but anything more overt is likely to be offensive. Leniency is usually shown to tourists, but again, it's always better to be safe than sorry. Full moon days are celebrated once a month, and authorities ban the sale and purchase of alcohol and fresh meat on those days, so plan accordingly. Never point with your index finger, especially at sacred items or paintings. Instead, motion with your chin or extend your hand, palm flat and skyward at the object you're referencing. Avoid touching people with your left hand. It's considered unclean and will insult the person. Never touch anything with your feet or point the bottom of your feet at religious altars or toward people. To avoid this, sit cross-legged or kneel on the floor while in a temple or holy place. If you accidentally bump someone's feet with your foot or shoe, quickly apologize. And never step over a person sitting or lying on the floor. It's very offensive. When greeting people, do it with a warm ayubawan, which means long life, with your palms joined together. And people don't say goodbye because it's considered too final. So instead, use language along the lines of see you later. When entering Buddhist and Hindu temples, there is also a lot to keep in mind. Watch where you're going, because tourists are not allowed to walk inside certain parts of the temple complex, and you must remove your shoes and hats. Leather, like wallets, belts, and bags, are prohibited inside many Hindu temples. It's illegal to mistreat Buddhist images. This includes having your back to Buddha and posing for photos with Buddhist statues. Be very careful before taking any photos at any places of worship. Also, tattoos, clothing, or jewelry associated with Buddhism is illegal. So watch what you wear and cover any tattoos like that with makeup or clothing. And anytime you're visiting another country, remember that it's a privilege, not a right. So be respectful of their ways of life, their religion, and their beliefs, whether you agree or not. Overall, Sri Lanka is quite safe for tourists. There's been an increase in incidents of low-level opportunistic crime, so watch your belongings. On the street, criminals may ride past on mopeds or motorbikes and try to snatch your bag. So I would advise keeping your phone, passport, and money safe in a body belt. Violent crimes against foreigners are rare. Gun crime is not uncommon, but it's usually directed at a dispute between different criminal groups and not at tourists. If you're like me and enjoy hiking and outdoors, there are a lot of animals that can hurt you on this island, and you never want to hike alone while traveling. Feral dogs, bats, and other animals can have rabies, so don't touch any animals. Elephants are usually gentle, but they will attack humans if they're provoked or feel threatened. Leopards are the island's top predator and can be very dangerous, but attacks on humans are rare. There are several types of crocodiles that are aggressive, dangerous, and will seek and attack humans. And honestly, crocodiles scare the crap out of me, so my advice is to stay far away from crocodiles. There are several highly venomous snakes responsible for many snake bite fatalities. The Russell's viper, Indian cobra, crate, and green pit viper can all kill you with just a bite. If you're in the water, keep an eye out for sharks, box jellyfish, sea urchins, and lionfish. Most importantly, no matter where you're traveling, make sure you inform someone about your plans before going anywhere. Tell someone reliable where you're going and what you'll be doing and when to expect you back. And my number one tip to staying alive on vacation is to pay attention to your gut. If something doesn't feel right, it isn't. Sandra Valentine was on a trip around the world that most people only dream of when she mysteriously disappeared on March 28, 1989, in Sri Lanka. When her personal diary was found, it gave insight into her final days, but no clues to how or why she vanished. It's been 35 years, and in that time, her father and brother have died without ever knowing what happened. Even though so much time has passed, if anybody knows anything about the disappearance of Sandra Valentine, now is the time to come forward. Reach out to your local authorities and tell them what you know. And finally, remember to leave a review and rate this podcast 5 stars if you like the show, or hell, even if you don't. But either way, feel free to let me know what you think. Please follow The Last Trip on Instagram at The Last Trip Crime Pod. And subscribe on Patreon to support the show. You'll get extra research, videos, photos, and updates, and even learn more about my personal travels. That's patreon.com/thelasttrippodcast. I'm Jamie Beebe, bringing you your last trip and signing off until the next one. Thanks for listening.